This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I've got a repeat guest on the show today, but man, I could do a show with her every single week. That's kind of how much we have to talk about. And we haven't talked for a while, so I think it's going to be a really good one. Let me tell you about her. Jacqueline Friedman is a writer, speaker, and activist, and creator of the hit book, Yes Means Yes, Visions of Female Sexual Power and a World Without Rape. It was one of Publisher Weekly's top 100 books of 2009. It's on number 11 on Ms. Magazine's top 100 feminist nonfiction books of all time. And she's also the author of one of my favorite books, which did not catch fire. And I have no idea why, because I recommend this book daily. It's called What You Really, Really Want, The Smart Girl's Shame-Free Guide to Sex and Safety. Her podcast, Unscrewed, is paving new paths to sexual liberation and was named one of the best sex podcasts by both Marie Claire and Esquire. We went to Wesleyan together, and so we've known each other since our undergrad days. Friedman's work has popularized the yes means yes standard of sexual consent that is quickly becoming law on many U.S. campuses. Her insistence that authentic sexual liberation is a necessary condition to end the systematic sexualization and violation of women, led by Lynn Michael Brown, co-founder of Spark, to call her this generation's version of Dr. Ruth. And if you follow Dr. Ruth, she's way better than Dr. Ruth, okay? She's just way better than Dr. Ruth. She's appeared on all sorts of TV, media. She's the former executive director of Women Action in the Media, WAM. She has her MFA in creative writing from Emerson College, and she has a brand new book, by which I mean it came out this week, just days ago. It's called Unscrewed, Women, Sex, Power, and How to Stop Letting the System Screw Us All. And I am so happy to welcome her back to the show. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, Jacqueline.
Thank you, Tristan. I would do a show with you every week. I would love that.
Okay, let's do that.
Let's do that. Why don't we do that?
I don't know, because both of us are like really busy.
Well, all right. Fair enough.
Okay, so what made you write this book? This book is obviously totally in your wheelhouse, but it combines cultural criticism with reportage and like stories of real people who are doing real stuff kind of on the front line. So it's a slight departure from what you've done before.
Yeah, the reporting was a new thing for me to branch out into, and I was pretty nervous about it. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but it was really fun. I mean, ultimately, the kind of reporting I'm doing in the book is just getting to know people and learning about their work and hanging out with them, and mm-hmm. I like to do all of those things. I came to do Unscrewed because I think of it kind of as the yin and the yang of What You Really, Really Want, which, thank you for saying that. I also don't know why it broke out, and I love that book so much. It's like weighs on my heart sometimes. Why didn't people buy it?
There's no other book like it, and it's so concrete and practical, and it's sort of like everyone should like go through those exercises is how I feel.
Obviously agree with you.
Okay.
But, I mean, look, so a lot of people bought the book, but it didn't break out into the mainstream. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so What You Really, Really Want, as you know, like takes as its assumption, the culture is broken, but you still have to figure out your sex life and your sexuality in it. And it's a sort of a roadmap for doing that. But it takes for granted that the sexual culture is broken.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So the part of that project that felt unfinished to me was that assumption. Because, of course, culture is not inherent. No culture is inherent. It's all made of people. And so we can remake it. And so the project of Unscrewed is to think about the ways in which the sexual culture is broken and think about how to fix it and introduce you to people who are already doing that work, part just because I want to shine a light on the great work these folks are doing. But honestly, my motive was also so that readers would feel like it's possible to do something, right? I want everyone to put down the book when they finish reading it and think, oh, like there's a place in this for me.
Mm. Yeah, no, it felt, that part felt very deliberate and conscious that that there are plenty of things for me to read right now that really, really bum me out. but I like a solution-based approach. Like, I like that you're like, yes, I'm going to talk about these things and give you really examples that are going to make your hair stand up. But let me also show you what someone's trying to do to intervene in this particular part of the problem.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I realized pretty early on when I was mapping out the project that if I didn't include that second part, it was going to be a really depressing book. and I feel like I just, from like a deep gut level, I'm not oriented that way, right? I don't want to contribute to paralysis. And I do always think that there's something each of us could be doing. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to, you know, find those stories and tell those stories so that it doesn't just feel like a roadmap of all the ways we're screwed, right? It's about getting unscrewed.
It's about getting unscrewed, exactly. Which feels hopeful in the end. It feels more hopeful. And God, do we need some hope.
I guess it's probably a good thing that I wrote most of this book before the election.
I know, but then it comes out and it feels urgent and timely. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would probably be remiss if I didn't just have you comment ever so briefly on this new wave that was kicked off by Harvey Weinstein being accused of sexual harassment and assault. And it seems like every day when I put on the media, a new person in Hollywood or in the public eye is, you know, more and more people are coming out telling their stories of sexual harassment, and people are sort of falling like dominoes. Is that how it feels to you?
Not really.
Okay.
Because there are so many people who aren't falling like dominoes. Mm-hmm. You know, like most of us who've been sexually harassed or abused at work have not seen the people who hurt us see any kind of justice because they're not famous and we're not famous, you know? And so I worry a little bit that the takeaway is going to be Hollywood at some point is going to be like, oh, we got rid of the bad guys. You know, as though like you could just excise Harvey Weinstein and that's like the bad apple and it's not all the bunch is saved. Right. And in truth, these guys are acting out toxic masculinity, right? Like that it's really a systems issue and that, you know, for example, the Academy booted Weinstein, but they seem still really cool with Polanski and Cosby, right? Like, I think that it's great. I really do think it's great to see powerful men held to account for the ways that they've used their power to harm women or anybody, really. And every time we see an example of that, I hope it, you know, puts the icy fear of God into the hearts of other men who might think that twice about doing the same things in the future.
Right.
I'm just like, no apologies about that. Like, I hope it scares the shit out of like any men who might consider engaging this anything remotely like the same behavior. But I think we're a long way from actual cultural transformation.
So it's not even for you a tipping point.
You know, I've gotten asked that question a lot of times in the last month, as you might imagine. And I just don't feel like the tipping point model is the right one. I see it as a step forward, right? But So was Anita Hill. Anita Hill was a huge step forward, but Anita Hill's testimony didn't solve sexual harassment. You know, literally last year, we were all having a very similar conversation in the aftermath of the Access Hollywood tapes, where all these women started coming forward and talking about Trump and other powerful men. And there was a hashtag that's time, was it not okay, instead of Me Too. And women were talking about being abused by powerful men. And people were talking about a tipping point. And I just feel like then we elected Trump. So I don't mean to be cynical. I actually think each moment is important and powerful and brings some more people along and sort of wakes up some more people. But I think that you can only tell a turning point with the goggles of history, right? Like, I feel like it's good. These are good, positive steps, and I celebrate them, and I'm glad. And there's also a lot of work ahead, and that's sort of where I locate myself on it.
Right, right. That's totally understandable.
Yeah.
Okay, we got to take our first commercial break. I don't know how that happened, but it did.
I know.
Okay, we are going to take a break, hear from our great sponsors, including the Pleasure Chest. You know I love the Pleasure Chest. And actually, Jacqueline's doing a bunch of stuff with the Pleasure Chest, which
she'll tell us
about.
Yeah, they're sponsoring my whole tour.
Yeah, so, they're sponsoring your whole tour. Okay, because yeah. I've noticed you're going to be in LA, you're going to be in New York. You were in New York already.
Yes.
But you're going to be in LA, and that's exciting. So the Pleasure Chest... The Pleasure Chest is, you know, is down with the program, people, and we want to support them because they support us. So listen to some commercials, and when we come back, more on how to get unscrewed with Jacqueline Friedman. Stay tuned. Hey, everyone. I love toys that leave an impression. Whether it's your first encounter with the magic wand or the luxurious feel of a leather paddle, everyone has that special toy that's both an implement of pleasure and an aphrodisiac. Haven't met the right toy yet? Well, the Pleasure Chest invites you to fall in lust. With boutiques in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, the Pleasure Chest staff is committed to helping you find the right toy in a safe and non-judgmental environment. Visit pleasurechest.com and browse their educators picks section for some of my favorites, or visit their special collections page and get inspired. Use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free massage candle with your purchase, courtesy of the Pleasure Chest.
B-Vibe is a premium collection of anal sex toys. Their products feature different sizes to accommodate users of all shapes, sizes, and experience levels. B-Vibe's high-end designs are couples-friendly, body-safe, and offer innovation aimed to create an exceptional user experience. You know I've got really high standards when it comes to anal toys, and I am in love with these. Plus, they stand behind each item with an easy-to-understand, hassle-free warranty. Dubbed as the Apple of anal, learn how B-Vibe and its premium anal plugs are engaging couples to discover the amazing pleasures of anal play. Visit bvibe.com and use coupon code Tristan to receive 20% off your purchase.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking today with Jacqueline Friedman about her brand new book, Women, Sex, Power, and How to Stop Letting the System Screw Us All. The full title is Unscrewed, but I just read you the subtitle. And Jacqueline, one of the chapters that I was especially interested in is a chapter you call Only Human. I liked it very much, and I felt like it was some territory that other people haven't explored. Although, a couple weeks ago, I got to hear Brené Brown talk live, which was really exciting and amazing. And she talked about humanizing and dehumanizing and the path that dehumanizing leads us to, which is obviously bad. So it was almost like, because I read these books around the same time that they were speaking to each other, that you and Brené are sort of having a conversation about it. And I'm wondering if you'll just talk about how you talk about dehumanizing in the book.
Yeah, I mean, thank you. Anytime I get mentioned in the same sentence as Brené Brown is a pretty good sentence. I struggled with that chapter a lot, actually, because it's a more abstract idea than some of the other chapters, which are like the media or the religious right is tied up in our government, you know, sort of things you can really sink your teeth in on a factual basis. And this is more of an idea chapter. And it opens with the story of this girl, I think her name is Danielle Hicks Best, who was sexually assaulted by an older guy in her neighborhood. She was a teenager, I think a young teenager.
11, I think.
11, is that right? Sorry, I didn't remember the age. And because she was Black and because she had had some mental health issues and lived in a poor neighborhood, the police wound up basically treating her like she was A, slutty, and B, crazy. And she wound up actually being incarcerated, the juvenile version of that, for making a false report. Like, there's all these documents about how they didn't take her seriously and called her names. And she was alienated from her family, her adoptive family, who loved and supported her, all because, you know, she started out already in a dehumanized position because of her intersecting identities, basically. And therefore, her sexual abuse wasn't taken seriously. And in researching that, I found that girls of color have a much higher odds of winding up in juvenile detention when they are sexually assaulted, when they themselves are sexually assaulted, than white girls do, right? Because we already assume Black girls are unreliable and overly sexual and therefore lying about their sluttiness and all of this horrible dehumanization. So, I think it's really important to look at the intersection between who we consider fully human and who we consider legitimately sexually sovereign, right? It's not just about like whether or not you get to have fun, but whether or not you get to call the shots about your body and your sexuality. And that's what that chapter is about. You know, it's about, you know, queerness, and I talk about my own coming out process and how being bisexual really left me betwixt and between. You know, I get to spend some time with Sarah Deer, who's this amazing Native American lawyer who's fought for the rights of Native American women and girls who, because of centuries of dehumanization at the hands of white people, are at great risk for sexual violation, but who also herself, like, when I say sexually sovereign, that's a term I learned from Sarah Deer in her sort of native conception of what we're working toward, right? It's not just about freedom from violence. It's about getting to really have control over ourselves. And so, you know, that relationship works both ways, whether or not, if we're sexual in a way the culture thinks of as wrong, we can be dehumanized for it. But also, if we're already dehumanized for other reasons, it interrupts our ability to be sexually sovereign.
And this is where I'm also remembering the chapter on the sex lives of homeless young women, who Heather Corinna from ScarletTeen.com.
Oh, this is in the same chapter, yeah.
With. Okay, right. So where she talks about kind of the amazing sort of self-possessed quality of some of these women and how they're very clear about their sexual desires and boundaries. But it's like we can't. So they have somehow internalized the values of your book, What You Really, Really Want, right? But yet their social location is such that the fact that they're women of color and the fact that they're homeless or and some of them are on the street and some of them may have other issues operating, doesn't allow them the sort of same treatment under the law as like white middle-class girls who report a rape.
Yeah, I thought it was so interesting because Heather told me, and this was in a conversation that we happened to be having, but I was working on this chapter at the time, and she told me that when she works, does sex ed with girls in the shelter, that they actually, as a whole, she's observed, have like much better boundaries and a much better internal sense of sexual sovereignty than like much sort of better off and more institutionally normal girls, right? Like middle class or whatever. And she thinks it's because the culture so doesn't care about them, honestly, that it hasn't bothered to try and control. it hasn't tried to shame them about whether or not they're virgins, right? Because it's already kind of decided they're worthless. It's sort of a weird, sad irony, but I think it's important to also see that, you know, these dynamics can crop up in really complicated ways. And I was glad to hear that, honestly, that there are some benefits, because a lot of these girls are homeless because either they're queer or because they were sexually abused in their household and couldn't stay there. You know, that sort of sexual dehumanization can be a cause of that homelessness as well as a result of it.
Right. And another big theme in your book is this one of faux powerment as a foil to empowerment. I wonder if you'll talk a little bit about that concept, which you
introduced. I mean, I actually think of faux powerment as a foil to power.
Okay.
because I feel like empowerment narratives wind up being like about the individual woman or girl on this you go girl level, which is the faux powerment thing I'm talking about. You know, faux powerment is all this sort of sexual cheerleading, I guess. Oftentimes it comes with something that's being sold, right? Faux powerment is like Dove beauty products saying, you're a really powerful lady as long as you use our special deodorant to make your armpits less yucky. Or like, you know, all the sort of 50 Shades of Grey, like, ooh, like if you let your boyfriend tie you up, you'll be powerful, sexually powerful. Which, you know, like, look, I like to get tied up. Like, I'm not saying that any of these things are bad on an individual level, but the idea that they're going to make us freer is really a myth, right? You know, I look at a lot of cases of women who are doing what all the folks who sell that sort of individual level cheerleading narrative would say they should do, about like women who went out and got sexy photo shoots or sent sexy photos to their partners and then had those partners, when they became ex-partners, you know, send them out into the world and wound up depressed and suicidal because they couldn't leave their house, right? Or women who got fired from their teaching positions for having private sexual photos stolen out of their drawer on their phone, you know, that the culture still punishes us. So you can tell women all you like, just let your freak flag fly and it'll make you powerful. But until the cultural conditions change, that's not actual power.
Right, right. And I'm struck because last month was the Slut Walk here in Los Angeles. Amber Rose's Slut Walk, sponsored by Reebok.
All right.
It's just, it's a strange thing, right?
I mean, we all got to get paid. Let's be real.
Right. We got to pay for the Slut Walk. But it's such a strange thing that the women I meet at the Slut Walk, which I'm always fascinated by, is like a lot of people are dressed in these sort of provocative outfits because that sort of originated the Slut Walk. You know, the idea that like what you wear is going to get you assaulted. And when I talk to women at the Slut Walk, they're like, you know, this is the only day out of the year that I can wear like ripped fishnets and a thong and write the word slut on my chest and proudly, you know, walk the streets of LA. And I'm thinking, oh, wait, because I have opportunities in my life to be in spaces where that feels safe to me.
Right.
Right. Because of the communities I'm embedded in and because of various privileges that I have, you know, dressing the way I want to dress and still being treated with respect is possible for me. But it's so not possible for a lot of women.
Yeah, I think that's the power of the Slut Walk, is creating that moment in time where people can experience the culture being different. And I think that makes people hungry for more days when the culture is different, right? That's my hope anyway. You know, that, you know, women's sexual expression is so often treated as private, right? As sort of like something that you keep behind the bedroom doors, or, you know, you certainly don't want to talk about it in public. And yet women's sexual expression is used politically against us constantly, right? Like, imagine if we could have a birth control access debate where we could just be like, we need birth control because we like sex and don't want to get pregnant. Like, and we don't have to say, like, what about the people with PCOS or, you know, like, which, you know, like, what about them? But also, like, fuck you.
Right. I mean, like, these respectability politics creep into even just basic birth control, access to birth control. We use it for other things. Well, what if we just use it for preventing pregnancy.
What if we just like sex, right? Like, what if we're able to talk about our sexual desires and do our sexual expressions without getting hurt, without getting our sovereignty violated? It shouldn't be a lot to ask, and yet we're so far from there.
Right, right. Okay, we got to take another break. Stay tuned, folks. The conversation is not over. And, you know, we could talk for hours, but we're going to have to jam it all in here. So just stay with us, listen to some commercials, and then come back for more Jacqueline Friedman. Hey, everyone. I love toys that leave an impression. Whether it's your first encounter with the magic wand or the luxurious feel of a leather paddle, everyone has that special toy that's both an implement of pleasure and an aphrodisiac. Haven't met the right toy yet? Well, the Pleasure Chest invites you to fall in lust. With boutiques in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, the Pleasure Chest staff is committed to helping you find the right toy in a safe and non-judgmental environment. Visit PleasureChest.com and browse their Educators Picks section for some of my favorites, or visit their Special Collections page and get inspired. Use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free massage candle with your purchase, courtesy of the Pleasure Chest.
B-Vibe is a premium collection of anal sex toys. Their products feature different sizes to accommodate users of all shapes, sizes, and experience levels. B-Vibe's high-end designs are couples-friendly, body-safe, and offer innovation aimed to create an exceptional user experience. You know I've got really high standards when it comes to anal toys, and I am in love with these. Plus, they stand behind each item with an easy-to-understand, hassle-free warranty. Dubbed as the Apple of anal, learn how B-Vibe and its premium anal plugs are engaging couples to discover the amazing pleasures of anal play. Visit bvibe.com and use coupon code Tristan to receive 20% off your purchase.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at PuckerUp.com. That's Tristan at PuckerUp.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I want to give a shout out to my amazing sponsor, The Pleasure Chest. As you know, they have lots and lots of events, most of which are free, all as part of their Pleasure Ed program at their stores. And I want to tell you about what's coming up. In Los Angeles, November 25th, Small Business Saturday, from 2 to 5 p.m., where there's going to be refreshments, there's going to be mini workshops, I think there's a spanking station. November 29th, Dominance and Submission with Mistress Mary. And then November 30th, there's a live taping of the great podcast Reality Bites. And guess who the special guest is? Jacqueline Friedman, the very Jacqueline Friedman. So you can see her live in L.A., which will be really cool. In New York City, November 29th is Head of the Class, Blowjobs 201 with Brandon B, and December 1st, Awkward Sex and the City Comedy Show. In Chicago, November 29th, Suck It, Lick It, Love It with Shawnee and Danielle. You can find out about all of these events and more at thepleasurechest.com. So I've been talking today with Jacqueline Friedman about her book, Unscrewed. And Jacqueline, of course, you take on another pretty big topic in this book, which is masculinity. And I'm wondering, how do we fix it? How do we change the culture? How do we change the culture of toxic masculinity? And how come we keep also pretending it's not a real thing?
I mean, I think that people keep pretending it's not a real thing because they don't want to have to do anything about it, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's just sort of a denial function. My basic thesis about how we fix toxic masculinity is that we have to start a lot younger, right? Right now, a lot of what we're doing is intervention. So once men are in maybe college, we start to try and intervene with them, but they've already formed a lot of ideas about what it means to be a man by the time they're 18. Mm-hmm. We have to start as young as possible. You know, in my dreams, we can start day one, right? Or even in utero, right? Like with the parents really rethinking how they think about gender and masculinity. You know, we still have this culture where girls are expected to identify with boys and think that boys are cool and interesting in all of the children's storytelling and movies and stuff. But boys are not expected to think girl stuff is cool. And you see this even in feminist stuff. You know, I talk about this great book, and I really do like this book called Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls, which is—
Yes, I've given that book as a gift. It's a beautiful book.
It's a beautiful book, but like, why is it for girls? Why is a book full of stories about amazing women for girls? We have to break out of that idea. Because if boys get raised thinking girls are cool and interesting, seeing their full humanity, getting back to what we were talking about before, I think that really could shift things quite dramatically. You know, I tell a story in that chapter about my twin nephews who we gave Rad American Women A to Z to when they were like two, right? Mm-hmm. And by the time they were 2.5, they would like identify Kate Bornstein and Dolores Huerta on sight, and they were so excited about it. And it's hard to imagine that's not going to change the way they think of women growing up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But to think of women also as agents with their own power, their own lives, and their own identities.
Exactly, that
seems fundamental. Like, because once you're 18, if you've had all of this other messaging, both about what it means to be a man and about what it means to be a woman, I think that's where the dehumanization piece comes back in, right? Where you tie that together.
Because men who grow up with traditional ideas of gender are taught that their masculinity hinges on the dehumanization of women, basically, on their being able to be more powerful than women. And whether that's because they want to protect the good women or not, ultimately that involves, you know, a lot of women getting shoved off narrow pedestals and a lot of other women never having access to them to begin with.
Right, right. And I think that's the other thing, is that it's so funny to think this, that we're still having this conversation, but it's like the Madonna whore dichotomy silently runs throughout your book. not so silently, but you know what I mean? That this idea that there are women who are good and pure and respectable and deserve certain things, and then there are women who are bad. And of course, women who are bad are all the women that we hang out with, and we're included in the bad category, obviously. But this notion that there is some sort of ideal woman, and if she just follows all of these rules, which are set up for her to fail, she'll be fine, right?
Right. And that list of things that she needs to do is literally impossible. But it's used to justify what's called sort of benevolent sexism, which is, you know, after the Access Hollywood tapes came out, Paul Ryan came out and made this statement about how women shouldn't be degraded that way. Women should be revered and adored, right? But that's not a three-dimensional humanizing of women either, right? That's making women like little statues on a pedestal. And eventually women are going to fall off because we are, in fact, three-dimensional humans. And we like a complex range of things. And sometimes we even do things that aren't great, but whatever. But when we have that revered or adored versus degraded, there's no middle space. And so whenever a woman falls off that pedestal, it's used to justify the hostile sexism that really hurts us.
Right, right. And so you also take on the sort of lack of sex education, not only just for, you know, in schools and for young people, but the lack of sex education at all these different professional levels. You sort of call it out, you know, and this is something we've obviously gone over on the show. You know, there are gynecologists who've had a couple hours of sex education training, and they're gynecologists.
It's bonkers.
And then, you know, family practice doctors don't have to have any, and yet they are asked routinely about all sorts of sexual issues and problems. And so I want to get into the mud on a little bit on how, what are the issues just among sex educators, and how that relates to like how we see sex you know, like I think you make some really important criticisms, and I think it's all reflective of this notion of the sort of value of sex and sex information.
Yeah, I mean, look, that chapter came about because I like started outlining the chapters, and then I was like, there is no chapter in which I can talk about sex education like as a profession. And I was like, that I'm obviously missing a dynamic here. And then I started to think about how many professions there are that impact our sexuality where people have no grounding whatsoever, right? Like police and all kinds of law enforcement people and lawyers and judges, journalists who write stories about all kinds of things having to do with sex and sexual violence. The medical profession came up constantly, and I spent a lot of the chapter talking about that. But real talk, like, most sex educators do not get certified or trained, and the trainings that are available can be hella problematic. So, you know, I hesitate to talk about this. You know, it's like being in a subculture and like airing that subculture's dirty laundry. But like, not every sex educator is created equal, and there's no standards. There's no standards that people get really held to. Like, have you ever been asked, like, what your qualifications are when you went to do sex education? I literally have never.
I mean, all they want to know is if I'm a doctor or have a PhD.
Right.
And then after that, they're going to hire me or not hire me. But then they don't, after that, it's just like, whatever.
Right. But none of it is about grounding in, like, sexual ethics or whether you're trauma informed or whether you know the basics of the information you're talking about. Like, it's an industry that's sort of built on hustle, and there are, again, a lot of tremendous people doing tremendous work in our industry, but there's also people who are doing crappy, like super heteronormative, like, you know, white centered if not white supremacist, you know, sometimes really misinformed and shame-based. Like, there's a wide variety of stuff. But the problem also is, and, you know, I don't come to a conclusion in this chapter about sex educators, because the problem is standardization. Like, who would decide what the standards should be, right? And who would enforce that? And the people who you most want to center in the industry are the people who are going to have least access to pay for that kind of training and that kind of certification. You know, it's a dicey issue.
But it's like the very fact that other industries have a sort of formal training program and certification and are taken seriously, and that sex education still, like, people are underpaid, people are asked to work for free, there are all these different ways that you can educate yourself, but many people are self-educated. I mean, I think it just speaks to this larger issue, right? Which is that no one gives a shit.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, there is a certification. ASEC does a certification.
Of course. But it's very expensive.
Incredibly expensive and involved. And there's not a lot of midpoint between that and then no certification. And also, I just don't see a lot of sign that the people who hire sex educators are requiring or even asking about it. So, I think you're right. I think that the fact is that people don't want sex education, you know, the powers that be, that is, or they don't want to think about it, right? Like, if you're going to come in and do it, they're like glad to have you, but they don't want to have to think about it themselves. It's still seen as really devalued and taboo to even just talk and think about sex in America. And so our industry suffers from that in every direction.
Absolutely. Okay, we got to take another commercial break because we have to keep the lights on too. Reebok is not sponsoring this show, by the way. It's the Pleasure Chest instead, pleasurechest.com. So we're going to go away for a few minutes and then come back for more with Jacqueline Friedman. Hey everyone, I love toys that leave an impression. Whether it's your first encounter with a magic wand or the luxurious feel of a leather paddle, everyone has that special toy that's both an implement of pleasure and an aphrodisiac. Haven't met the right toy yet? Well, the Pleasure Chest invites you to fall in lust. With boutiques in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, the Pleasure Chest staff is committed to helping you find the right toy in a safe and non-judgmental environment. Visit pleasurechest.com and browse their educators picks section
for some of my favorites, or visit their special collections page and get inspired. Use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free massage candle with your purchase, courtesy of the Pleasure Chest.
Bee Vibe is a premium collection of anal sex toys. Their products feature different sizes to accommodate users of all shapes, sizes, and experience levels. Bee Vibe's high-end designs are couples-friendly, body-safe, and offer innovation aimed to create an exceptional user experience. You know I've got really high standards when it comes to anal toys, and I am in love with these. Plus, they stand behind each item with an easy-to-understand, hassle-free warranty. Dubbed as the Apple of anal, learn how Bee Vibe and its premium anal plugs are engaging couples to discover the amazing pleasures of anal play. Visit BeeVibe.com and use coupon code Tristan to receive 20% off your purchase.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking today with Jacqueline Friedman. She runs a great podcast called Unscrewed, and Unscrewed is the name of her new book, Women, Sex, Power, and How to Stop Letting the System Screw Us All. So, Jacqueline, I want to move on next to the internet. Is it our saving grace, or will it doom us to hell?
No. First of all, I want to say I love how you, like, really lean in to the subtitle of the book. Like, it sounds so good when you say it. But you're like, stop letting them screw us all. I have to start saying it that emphatically.
Okay.
The internet is a tool. You know, I like to say the internet's like gasoline. It kind of just is an accelerant on all our human impulses. And so you can find lots of examples of how the internet has facilitated sexual liberation, right? People getting access to information they never had access to. Like, you just even have to look at this podcast that we're on right now, or Scarlatine, or, you know, any of the amazing resources that are out there. You know, a lot of the organizations and activists that I profile in Unscrewed use the internet in ways that make their work literally possible. You know, and sex workers who formerly literally having to be on the street can now use the internet to find clients and be a little safer, right? Like, you can find a million examples of ways in which the internet has made our lives better around sex and sovereignty. But also, I probably don't have to tell people there's a lot of shit, right? You know, I've been on the receiving end of a lot of abuse. You know, there's what's called revenge porn, although I don't love that term. But you know, there's all kinds of horrible things that the internet is used for in terms of abusing folks around sex and sexuality. So all of it is just human driven. But what I'm really interested in is looking at who controls those internet systems and who regulates them, right? So thinking about, for example, and this is actually from a different chapter, but Facebook's ban on ads that acknowledge that sex is fun.
Oh, yes. Oh, Facebook. Please don't even. We can go down that road. But yeah, no, almost any sex educator I know cannot advertise on Facebook because it violates the terms of service.
And it's literally spelled out that way. Like, you're not allowed to say that sex is fun.
Right.
Which, from a sexual health promotion point of view, is incredibly damaging. But the questions we have to ask are, like, why does Facebook get to make that call? Well, it's because it's a private company, and now private companies own our public square. Right? And those private companies are owned almost exclusively by white guys, mm-hmm. cisgender white guys, who think that their ideal is to create what they call a neutral platform. And they think it's neutral because it seems neutral to them. But in fact, what they're doing is creating platforms where all kinds of abuse and harassment, much of which uses sexual taboo and sexual stigma to terrorize people, they let, you know, those abusers run wild. Like, if you don't regulate, you're supporting the people who already have privilege in the conversation.
Right. I mean, Holly Hughes, who's a lesbian professor in Michigan and a playwright and performance artist, she wrote a post where she was just talking about being a dyke. You know, she's like, blah, 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 dyke, blah, 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 dyke. And they banned her. Facebook banned her.
Well, because she used the word dyke?
Yes.
Yeah, because they have no sense of context and because their moderation is farmed out to countries where they can pay really low wages. Oftentimes those are countries that have really rigid gender dynamics and not a lot of understanding of social context in other countries. And they're given like 30 seconds to make a decision about each, you know, reported whatever. So they totally miss context, right? That there's a difference between a nipple that appears in an erotic image and a nipple that appears with when a woman is breastfeeding. Not that I think either of those should be banned from Facebook, but
of course
they're still fucking different, right? Like, but it took literally years of fighting to get Facebook to recognize the difference between those things.
So what is the answer for us to take more power and have more presence and control online where it seems like, you know, the world is happening at this point. Like, it's all unfolding before us.
The online. Horse is out of the barn, yes.
Yeah, and like, it's all happening in the comments section. And if you're not paying attention, it could happen to you.
I mean, I think that there's a couple of answers. You know, you probably know this, but I end the book with this question, like, what should we do? And there's some basic answers which have to do with getting women into the boardrooms in major numbers, right, of the companies that control our discourse, right? I think that actually really would make a difference in terms of changing the culture and getting people in who understand what's at stake. I think that companies need to, instead of valuing this mythical neutrality that can't possibly exist, have to value transparency, right? Saying, these are our values, and here's how we apply them, and you can decide whether you want to participate in a space that has these values or not. Mm-hmm. Because not moderating is a value.
Of course,
it's
yes.
A value. Mm-hmm. So we have to stop lionizing neutrality and start valuing transparency. We have to just like hold all of the producers to account. So there's a story in that chapter about this relatively new virtual reality game that this woman got sexually assaulted in game, right? She turned it to multiplayer and immediately this guy started groping her in the game and she didn't know how to get out of that situation or who to report to. And there were the white dudes who developed that game had literally not planned for that to happen. Even in 2015, 2016, when they built that game, you know, so, and there's no excuse in this day and age to not realize that that's going to happen on your platform. So we need to vote with our dollars to a certain extent. I think we also need to look at the question of AI, right? So there's a lot of machine learning right now that's going into determining what content is available and what are those machines learning? Who are they learning from? Are they just learning from a group of white guy nerds in a room? So there's a bunch of those sort of granular solutions, but ultimately the internet is the culture, right? Like ultimately what we have to do is unscrew the culture, not unscrew the internet, unfortunately.
I mean, I think that's one of the amazing things about the internet that I like is that because we have to write it all down, you know what I mean? Like some of this abuse gets documented in a way that is like, let's just go to the thread. Let's just go to the screenshot. Whereas before there was abuse happening sort of person to person. And then it was like, he said, she said, blah, blah, blah. And women being discredited. And now it's like, let's see what words were written.
It definitely makes a lot of things more visible for sure. Right. Yes. Like for better and worse, right? Like that there are people who have videotaped themselves raping somebody and put it online. And that's terrible and re-traumatizing, but also admissible in court. Right? So making that abuse visible, I think that it is changing things. I think it's a double-edged sword.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. So before we go, I need to know just in a few minutes for you to tell me what is happening in the world that you didn't get to put in this book that you are super excited about, where you're like, this is change, something's growing, I'm on it.
I'm feeling really stumped. Oh, no.
That's funny.
What's happening in the world?
Like, does something, you know, give you hope? Like, is there some small thing that you saw or that happened and you're like, okay, this could be the seeds for the next thing?
I mean, honestly, this entire year, this entire cursed political year, the thing that I'm inspired by and that I'm encouraged by is just people are pissed off and fed up. You know, and so I feel like it's not about like one particular subject matter area. It's really that so many more people are waking up to the idea that the culture really is partially created by them. And if you opt out of that, you're letting other people decide what kind of world you want to live in. And so I see a lot more people opting in. So I really just hope the book is another tool to help them figure out places they want to opt in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, the name of the book again, folks, is Unscrewed: Women, Sex, Power, and How to Stop Letting the System Screw Us All. It's by Jacqueline Friedman. Thank you so much for joining me, Jacqueline.
Oh, thanks for having me. Literally anytime.
So Jacqueline's website is jacquelinefriedman.com, JacquelineFriedman. There's a great story in the book about how she got her name Jacqueline, which I didn't know about you and I fucking love. But listen, she's going to be all over the place. And by all over the place, I mean really all over the place. So she could be coming to a town or city near you on this book tour, which kicks off right now. And so go to her website and find out where she's going to be. Hear her speak live. It will definitely change your life. And you can also follow her on Twitter at Jacqueline F and on Instagram at Jacqueline F Able.
It's Jacqueline Effable.
It's Jacqueline Effable. Right. Jacqueline Effable. I get it. Okay, I get it now. I always looked at your Instagram and was just like, what does that mean?
Nobody Jacqueline gets it. I'm the Effable. Only one who gets it.
Okay, I got it now. I got it now. Jacqueline Effable. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, and Jake and his friends helping him on the board today, and everyone at Voice America. Next week is actually going to be a holiday week, so we're doing a rebroadcast. But then we will be back on December 1st, live, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the show. So find me on Facebook, on Twitter, and on Instagram. I'm at Tristan Paramino. The show is at Sex Out Loud Radio. And take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.